Welcome to the Leadership Journey podcast. I'm Alan Wilson, the host of the podcast, and each week we try to give you the opportunity to reflect on some of the things that make up a leadership journey. We've been talking to the Reverend Alistair Bill. He's the minister of St. Field Road Presbyterian Church, and last week was the first part of the interview with Alistair, and this week we pick up part two when Alistair will be talking about some of his ministry and talking about some of the things that he's learned along the way as part of his leadership journey. Well, Alistair, here we are back again. I think we got you as far as Larne and a very rich assistantship experience that you had with a very strong and challenging mentor who taught you a lot. Your first full charge, is that what you would call it?
Yes. I was called to the home mission charge of Bray, Greystones and Darklow.
Right.
The act of going there comprised quite a lot of elements, which I think it might be helpful to know.
Absolutely.
During 1981, Dr. Linus was heading off to head a PCI delegation to the United States, and I was going to be in charge for 3 weeks. He gave me a weekend off before he went, and for that weekend, it happened to coincide with a meeting of the UCCF Associates, which was in Greystones in County Wicklow. As a family, the Hegartys, Angela's family, went, and I went with them. And
did you already know Angela at this point?
She was working with me as one of the leaders.
Okay.
We were not yet attached in any significant right. way. But I went, and the subject was evangelism in Ireland. Jerome Bars from Le Brie in Switzerland was the speaker. That was powerful. And the most powerful bit was the Sunday afternoon when everything was tidying up and people were looking at what this meant for Ireland. And I remember a lassie, she's from Dunleary, her name is Therese. She, obviously from a Catholic background, had come to faith, and she was a member of an independent evangelical church in Dunleary. And she said, why are all the evangelical speakers and preachers, why are they all in the north? Mm. Why would none of them come down here to serve down here? That's virtually all I remember, because that was the question that buzzed in my head for the next 6 months. Then I was also in correspondence with a slightly older friend and his wife, who by that time had gone to Jamaica to be missionaries, Wilson and May Gordon. And one of the pieces of advice that they gave me in a letter was, don't stick to a 35-mile radius from Belfast. God might be calling you to somewhere much further distant where your ministry might be more needed. And that, of course, coincided with this other voice, Therese, from a few months earlier. And so when the opportunity came, I began to explore home mission possibilities. There were one or two places I thought the Lord might call me, but it looked as if there was a minister going to be going to County Wicklow. And then, lo and behold, he didn't, because the congregations didn't call him.
So you just, in terms of procedure, you had to be accepted by the Presbyterian Mission Home, the Mission Board, and then the local congregation had to approve of that?
No, more importantly, I had to get to that date when I was eligible.
Okay, right.
And I wasn't eligible till January
1982. Yeah.
So we're talking about the autumn 1981.
Right.
And things were happening over which I had no control or input. But again, I felt it was God saying, here's the place for you. I remember going to an event in Dublin, and meetings a couple of the leaders from one of the congregations who wanted to look me over and see, was I really interested in it, and was it more than a rumour? So I assured them that when the date came, I would be putting in an application, which I had to do. I was interviewed after about 2 weeks after that. The committee recommended that I go and preach. Angela and I, by that time, were more than a little romantically engaged. We were engaged. And we went down at the end of January 1982, preached in three congregations, met the leadership of each of the congregations, and within a few weeks received a call.
Mm-hmm.
There are more steps, but that's the gist of it.
Yeah.
And then began there just after Easter in 1982.
And how many years did you stay with those churches?
6 years.
6 years.
Six
yeah.
years.
What would be a couple of the highlights of that?
It might seem strange to say it as a highlight, but one was a sense of freedom that you weren't looking over your shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Because there weren't so many evangelical Presbyterians.
Well, there were,
to look over your
I
shoulder.
Was the only Presbyterian minister
in
the whole county. I to wind up some of my Church of Ireland friends, called myself the Bishop of Wicklow. the other thing that was there was having input and fellowship, with lots of people in the local community who were our age, many of whom had come to faith through Greystone CSSM. But also, one of my near neighbours was Ken Clark, Fanta Clark.
Mm-hmm.
He was from Crinkham. Trevor Morrow came after me, it should be said, to Lucan. We had the Cardews in Carrigeden, John and Joan. Lots of people like that. And you had time to have fellowship, to discuss, to meet and pray together. I'm not sure it should be a boast, but that was a time when there was a great opening of people to the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
People from all sorts of backgrounds, and where you were asked about your faith, and that opportunity was a golden one. So we also saw congregations grow and develop. We were able to get, thanks to the help of the Presbyterian Church's home mission, get all the buildings in order and give a sense that there was a future for the congregations. So were those highlights, is that enough? Sometimes I think I need to sit down and just overview all that went on.
Mm-hmm.
But God was certainly doing a work mm-hmm. in people's situations, and I was a little part of that.
Was it in any sense destabilising to be, you know, in a ministry situation where you weren't surrounded with lots of Presbyterian brothers where you would have understood exactly where they were coming from? Because in some ways you're ministering in a situation with lots of folk who just don't have any kind of baggage if they've come to faith from all these different backgrounds. That was more of an opportunity for you rather than, oh goodness, what do I do here?
No, it was very definitely an opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. But was there any of the other, you know, what do I do now? Is there a rule for this? Is there something in the book that tells me what I need to do?
Presbyterian ministers in the greater Dublin area would meet once a month as well.
Yeah.
And I remember one of those ministers, Dr. Robin Boyd. I had a great conversation one Monday evening with him at one of these gatherings. And it was really how we related to the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so helpful in terms of the importance of getting to know people,
mm-hmm.
so that if issues came up, you knew who you were talking to. and not cutting ourselves off,
mm-hmm.
which might have traditionally been the way
that
Presbyterians and maybe others might mm-hmm. have gone about things in previously.
Did you sense there was a different way of doing ministry on that side of the border from how you would have done ministry had you gone straight into it up here?
I think there was. Mm-hmm. Up here, so much of ministry then, and maybe even now, is about doing the things that need to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And most weeks, the things that need to be done are too many to get done.
Mm-hmm.
So you're always living with the thought of things that you haven't done. And that's unfortunate. There weren't so many people. There weren't so many meetings. So you had more opportunity to learn and to reflect and to spend with people.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say the other side of the border, because the border counties, both north and south, are, I think, different. Mm-hmm. Another different culture.
Sure.
But if you take a line from Sligo to Drogheda mm-hmm. and take everything south of that,
mm-hmm.
yes, ministry could be very different.
Mm-hmm.
And dare I say it, more fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem was in the County Wicklow situation is I had three congregations and was travelling a lot.
Yeah.
I also had a school to look after and was involved in the early stages of building a new school.
Mm-hmm.
So that took up mm-hmm. more time than would have been mm-hmm. liked. And you couldn't give yourself to any one of the three communities completely.
Yeah.
But the support, not just from Presbyterians, but from ministry colleagues right across the spectrum,
mm-hmm.
Was very good. And that's not something that has been replicated in the north. Mm-hmm. We're a bit too much in our own silos.
Okay, yeah, that's a good expression. It's a good expression. You mentioned this line from Sligo to Drogheda. I'm trying to figure where Monaghan comes in that.
Monaghan is a border county.
Right, so it's to the north of the line that you've drawn. Right.
Yeah.
So you moved to Monaghan then. Different culture, different kind of environment?
Different culture, different environment. People very committed to their church. Politically, older generations still very much looked north.
Mm-hmm.
Younger generations were much more incorporated into the country, and people, those young people would be much more likely to go to Dublin for mm-hmm. university.
Mm-hmm.
So we were still in the troubles.
Sure.
So things were happening, and that closed the Protestant, the Presbyterian community a bit more in on itself.
Mm-hmm.
So a different type of ministry, much more like a northern ministry, but with numbers dropping just
mm-hmm.
a little,
mm-hmm.
And people working on the principle of, you know, what we have, we try to hold.
Mm-hmm.
But lovely people.
Mm-hmm.
We get on really well. Country people, I enjoyed them, being a countryman myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that was six years.
But then, and then a big shift, because you're coming now to Belfast, so country to city, border area in the south, albeit, to Belfast in the north. What was that transition like? What were some of the challenges that brought up?
That was, in retrospect, much more challenging than I ever imagined. We had knowledge.
Was there a culture shock? Reverse culture shock?
There was reverse mm-hmm. culture shock. I remember within the first week, I was in the kitchen of the manse, and somebody said, oh, there's the postman. And I glanced out the window and I saw a red van. And I thought, it's supposed to be a green van,
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
which of course is the colour down south.
Yeah.
And I realised then the readjustment that was going to have to take place.
Mm-hmm.
On one occasion when I was, we were still in Monaghan, and we happened to be up Angela suggested we might go into Belfast on a Thursday evening, which we did. And in spite of the fact that there were still, the troubles were still on, Belfast was hotching with people shopping. And I found it very odd. I'm not a shopper, of course, it should be said. But I found it very odd because that's not something we'd ever experienced previously.
What about in the ministry context then? Was St Fíor Ruaidhrí, was it a new church at that point?
No, St Fíor Ruaidhrí began in 1960.
Okay, right. So for 30 years.
And they had a long ministry, the Reverend James McAdam, to 1987, who retired. The next ministry was challenging for various reasons. And I was coming into a congregation that quite a lot of people had left, for various reasons. But I already had I already had knowledge of St Fíor Ruaidhrí because I had been a CSSM leader in Newton Breda.
Right. Okay, yeah.
So not only did I know St Fíor Ruaidhrí, I knew Knock Breda Church of Ireland, and I knew Newton Breda Baptist a bit. So I'm coming into a situation that I thought I knew a bit, but actually didn't. So it took quite a while of doing just some of the basics, talking to people, listening to people, trying to find out where they were, and then just doing the steady work of preaching and teaching Sunday by Sunday to bring a little bit of stability to the congregation.
Now, you'd had 12 years in the Republic,
yes.
Right? What would you say, how can I put this, how had those 12 years equipped you for ministry in Belfast? 12 years, in two very different contexts. How had they equipped you for ministry in Belfast? Would you have approached St Fíor Ruaidhrí very differently had you never been in those other two places, if all of your ministry had been somewhere in the north?
Undoubtedly.
So were there things you had to leave behind you? Were there things that you thought, I'm going to bring this, even if the context is different, I think there's something to learn here?
I think the word you used is the important one. Context. The Apostle Paul talks about becoming all things to all people. And that means that he adapted himself to that situation, to the people who were there. Yes, the gospel is unchanging, but it comes differently in different situations. And we need to find the right way of expression, the right vehicle of expression to bring the gospel into a situation where there has been loss in the congregation, where there has been fallout, where people have left in bad humour, where the people who are left behind are not sure of where they're going forward. So working on that, not in any big trumpet blowing way, but just in a quiet way of reassuring that God is present in when his people meet and in the lives of his people.
Well, I know before we started recording this, we were talking about Nehemiah, the story of Nehemiah. And one of the things that struck me recently is when Nehemiah arrives in Jerusalem, he first of all rests, but then he spends the next two or three days going out without telling anybody what he's doing and just inspecting what's happening on the ground. And it seems to me that leadership principle in that is that even if you have a vision that has been put into your heart by God, you still have to respect the context and what the reality is on the ground rather than just land in from Jerusalem and say, or into Jerusalem and say, look, okay, folks, here's what we're going to do. And I suppose I'm trying to connect that to what you're saying. You've come into a church where there was a degree of hurt, there was binding up that needed to be done. There was no point in you coming in and saying,
very much,
hello, everybody, I've arrived, here's where we're going. Mm. Yeah, yes. So it's that sensitivity to context.
Yes. A wee quote here. A man called Max Dupré said the first responsibility of a leader is to define reality.
Yes.
And thinking about what that might mean, I think that means observing, as Nehemiah did, listening to others who know what's the background and what's the scene, and discussing where we are. Mm-hmm. We all know the story of a man asked for directions and is told, well, if I'm going there, I wouldn't start here. We've got to start from where here
yes,
is.
Exactly.
So where is here?
Yeah.
What is the reality? And I think that is important.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose I just did some of that, not quite naturally, mm-hmm. but almost without thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But having been in Wicklow and in Monaghan, you were accustomed to doing things in a different context.
Mm-hmm.
So you thought about it mm-hmm. a bit more
yeah.
rather than just trying to
yeah.
take the same model as you might have
yeah.
for somewhere else.
Yeah, I think that's very helpful. And I think for relatively younger leaders, and I'm thinking, I mean, you must have been early 40s when you arrived in St. Peter Road, were you?
I was in my early 40s.
So you're still,
yes.
I mean, I think we would agree that that's still quite young.
It certainly is.
But I think for younger leaders who may be listening to the podcast, just the idea that, just the idea of context, and mm. however passionate you may feel about your vision for changing the world or transforming your city or whatever it might be, take the time to know where you are before you start trying to do any of that. Yeah.
Yes, I think the picture of Nehemiah going about the walls at night is one that should stick in our minds in that biblical character's actions.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the other things that, you know, reviewing your leadership journey to this point, what are some of the other things that you would say, these are really important things that I have gleaned along the way, that if I could spare somebody having to learn these things by experience, I would tell them?
I think the defining reality is one of the things that I think is important. The other one is that God calls,
mm-hmm.
and that's a continuing present.
Mm-hmm.
It's not God called me in the past, but God continues to call us all in the present. Calls us to himself,
yeah.
Calls us to service,
yeah.
and calls us to situations
yeah.
To where we can minister.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in difficulty, when you're in straits, that's something to remember,
mm-hmm.
that God does call us.
What does that look like in a practical way for somebody who is in difficulty? How do you think holding on to that sense of calling is going to help them through that?
Yeah.
How do they cultivate that ongoing sense of calling? Maybe that's a better way to ask.
I think that's through personal devotions.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's through, as I said before, study and particularly prayer with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes the reinforcing of that comes not from what I think or from what I say, but from what somebody else says, and I happen to overhear because I'm there. And I think it's also important to have time with God, maybe on retreat, maybe with others, maybe on your own. One of the things I like to do is to walk 5 or maybe 6 days a week, and that's the time when often God speaks a word that confirms
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm. This is a bit of a sidebar, but on that, have you over the years learned forms of spiritual disciplines that wouldn't be the sort of traditional conservative evangelical, you know, the daily quiet time? Not that we're decrying that at
no.
all, but I think sometimes there are other forms of spiritual practice that are less familiar in some circles. Have you developed things like solitude or?
Well, I think solitude is good, but sometimes in the context of a retreat where there are other people with whom
okay.
you will meet up. Certainly for the last 12 years, I would have going to different places
mm-hmm.
in terms of solitude,
mm-hmm.
Whether here in Northern Ireland or across the water or in the States,
mm-hmm.
Spending time on retreat, maybe 2 days, maybe 4 days,
mm-hmm.
That has been very helpful. If I might mention our local Clio Pass, run by Ross Sterling,
yeah.
that has been very good.
Yeah.
The Northumbria community, I should say, I've not been with them for a while. The last time I tried to book, it was full up. But I still use some of their materials, and that has been helpful. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That's all under this sort of rubric of cultivating that sense of calling, and the importance of that as a sustaining thing. And I think lots of people have found that it's in difficult. So both that the calling gets tested, but then also the strong sense of calling can keep you going through difficult times. Okay, what else? I know you've got, since we're not on video here, people can't see this, but I know you've got some notes here of things that you've been thinking this through, so I want to give you the opportunity to keep talking. These are rich lessons.
Let me make a couple of points. I'm aware we're probably coming towards the end of
our
time. We've
got a few more minutes. Okay. It's not radio, so there's no ad break or anything like that. Okay. The news isn't going to come on.
We've mentioned defining reality. That's important. Related to that is the importance of seeing the bigger picture in the light of God's plans and purposes. Mm. Sometimes we can be so taken up with the daily routine, the daily preparation, the daily meetings, the need to visit in hospital or see people at home. It's important to step back. And that's where the concept of retreat or getting out for a walk, doing these sorts of things is really important. And asking questions like, where are we going? Mm-hmm. Where is God leading? What is God wanting to say to us as a congregation, as a people at this time? Seeing the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And that's the really important thing, especially when you're in trouble, mm-hmm, or mm-hmm, you're struggling, or you're not sure you're going to make it through.
Have you got an example of that? Is there anything that stands out as you look back and, you know, the various ministry situations you've been in? Is there something that would help flesh that out for listeners?
We've already mentioned the fires in St. Field Road. The Sunday morning of our second fire, we had people around, we had media turning up. Fortunately, my clerk of session, Alistair McCracken, was able to speak, having consulted with a couple of others. He was able to speak to the media. And all the time I was thinking, what's going on here? Why is this happening? And how do I help this people see the way forward? So on that Sunday morning, I called for people to gather that afternoon at 4 o'clock, and that was the beginning of 2, 3, 4 weeks of actually saying, what's the bigger picture here? What do we have to keep in mind? So that people didn't get downhearted and depressed, discouraged, which it would have been very easy to do. So there were the practical things that had to be done. There were the police coming around, asking questions, making investigations. You dealt with them. But for the congregation, it was a case of, let's see what God's going to do here. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, is probably the most recent example of...
Sure, and you had to lead them in that.
Well, the importance is somebody has to lead.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a part of me... there's part of me likes to be in the back seat, mm-hmm, like somebody else to be up front. But I once read W.E. Sangster, the great Methodist wartime leader. He said, I love the back seat, but then nobody's standing at the front, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, you feel impelled forward. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't compare myself to Sangster, but yes, I feel mm-hmm that sometimes. Mm-hmm. Give a lead, mm-hmm, some direction, some decision. Mm-hmm.
Is it too early to know what sort of impact that whole thing has had on the congregation?
I think it probably is too early.
Okay.
Safe to say that people have been very united, very supportive, not complaining in spite of the fact that we're 18 months mm-hmm after the fires and we're still in process of restoration. And that can only have been God at work, bringing us together mm-hmm. and pointing us forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I know that not just within the congregation, not just within our local community, but right across these islands, people have prayed for us and through this challenging time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Goodness, it's not. I'm thinking similarities with Nehemiah. You know, the burned ruins of the city of Jerusalem, and Nehemiah comes in. As you've come in and said, you had to lead your people on St. Field Road. And of course, Nehemiah, that there's that beautiful phrase he talks about: "The good hand of my God mm-hmm. was upon me," which was terrific. So, although he led well, he very much attributed it to God, didn't he?
And that is important.
Yeah.
One of the things that I have said again and again, not just in the last couple of years, but over 20 plus years, is that this is God's church. Mm-hmm. It's not my church, it's not the elders' church, but it's God's church mm-hmm. and it's God's purposes mm-hmm. that are the really important
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
So the other thing to say, just as we come towards a close, is that leadership always involves other people.
Mm-hmm.
Someone once said, you know you're a leader when you've got people following you. And that is a basic importance. But also, I would want to say that leadership is best done as a team. None of us have all the gifts. Mm-hmm. So we need to have people around us who will do what they're gifted with. Mm-hmm. We need to work as a team. And as much as possible needs to be delegated to other people. But not just delegate and tell them to get on with it. Delegate and encourage. Don't abandon people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Make sure that they know that what they're doing is supported. 'Cause in the end, all ministry is relational.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. We need to encourage folk on their Godward journey or with God on their journey. So it's important to look out for individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't used the shepherding word, but those of us who lead are basically under shepherds.
Yeah.
And Jesus is the good shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
So people are really important.
Yeah.
And you can't lead in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And all your leadership must relate to people.
Yeah. That's terrific. Alistair, thank you very much indeed. Appreciate you opening up your life, your story, and for some just absolute nuggets of leadership wisdom there. It's like this has been like a condensed leadership training seminar. Lots of things for people to pick up and take away with from a seasoned leader whom God has clearly blessed and continues to work through. So thank you for your time, and God bless you as you get your building open, God willing, on the 1st of April. We hope all that goes well, and thank you.
Thank you, Alan, for the opportunity to explore this, and I just say to all the younger leaders who are listening to this, God blesses us, not because we are worthy of that, but because he's a God who blesses us. May you know his blessing in your leadership calling.
Wonderful. Thank you. And indeed, thank you to the Reverend Alistair Bill for being with us on the podcast over these past 2 weeks. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. It is the Leadership Journey Podcast. That will also give you the opportunity to listen to previous episodes. And there's a website, yourleadershipjourney.net, and you can contact me through the website. Our guest over the next couple of weeks will be Bishop Harold Miller, who's the Bishop of Down and Dromore Church of Ireland here in, well, obviously in Ireland. So we look forward to having you join us again next week. Thanks for listening.